Peeped.
What's up, my haunted gals, ghouls, and non-binary ghosties? I am Princess Leeks.
And I am Tessa Netting.
And you are listening to The Geek Podcast, your one-stop shop for fandom conversations, pop culture, media, discourse, all the things we love about being nerds online.
Yes, each week we skim the surface of what's popular in geek culture, then deep dive into the lore of a Netflix world bigger than our own.
And today we are kicking off Pumpkin Spice Spooky Season, right? With Mike Flanagan's The Midnight Club. The man never misses, and we are very chilled and very scared.
So scared, so chilled, so excited. Because, Princess, this is my favorite time of the year. All the ghosts, all the witches, all the summonings. Ooh, I love it. But of course, first, Princess, I gotta know, what has got you geeked this week?
What got me geeked this week, Tessa, is I went to New York Comic Con, the pumpkin spice latte of Comic Con, because you guys get the summer one and we get the little fall one. And there were definitely some really fun things there. I love that they had like a whole tabletop gaming section downstairs.
Ooh, so nice.
Yeah. There was just really cool things. There was a lot of stuff for Black Adam, saw some stuff for Titans, saw our, of course, amazing Netflix shows, getting to show off what's coming up new for them. It was the last year New York Comic Con was like still there, but this year felt a lot like pre-COVID New York Comic Con, for better and for worse. But I really I always enjoy getting to see friends, supporting local artists. I got a really spicy Batman Catwoman pick, which I'm very happy about. So what any opportunity to support artists, creators that are just writing and illustrating the stories that we love and bringing characters we love to life in new, interesting ways. That's my favorite part, is just celebrating that artistic expression. So New York Comic Con is what got me geeked this week.
Oh, I love that so much. I think that New York Comic Con was the first con that I ever went to.
Oh, it's so fun. Yeah, it's
yeah. Great. I went so long ago, and I remember I wore a Katniss Everdeen costume, and I went all by myself. I didn't know anybody, and I just walked around the convention by myself because I had like a free day or something.
Amazing.
And I loved it. I was like, this is great. And now it's so much bigger, like, because New York Comic Con, even compared to San Diego, used to be so, so small. And even now, I feel like it's gotten a lot bigger than it used to be, like 10 years ago, which is when I went, you know?
Oh, yeah. It's huge. Like, now that the whole Javits Center is, like, up and at them, they have, like, press on one whole side. They have Artist Alley on one whole side. It was really intense. And, of course, Oscar Isaac was there and Brendan Fraser was there. And it was just, like, it was so much. The endorphins were hitting.
Oh, definitely. That's like one of my favorite things about conventions, is just like, not only do you get to find out fun information and get to, if you're lucky enough, have press interactions, but the best part is just being surrounded by all of like the fellow fans and, like you said, like supporting artists, like getting to shop and not only get the, like the coolest, most unique things you'll ever see that you won't be able to find anywhere else, but then you're supporting someone else that loves that thing too. It's just like the best feeling in the world. And a lot of people are dressed up or in like cool nerdy clothing. So then you can like either compliment them or be like, oh my God, where did you get this? I love this shirt that you're wearing. Tell me right now. So it's just like, I just love a big room full of nerds together. It's my fave. Can't go wrong.
It's so fun. Yeah, I had a great time. What has got you geeked this week?
Oh man, this week probably... this is going to be a little lame, but what has got me geeked this week is that I get to go on a little firm retreat with Joe's entire law firm. So it's going to be me and the lawyers, baby.
Wow, look at you. You're going to be, it's like Suits all over again. You're going to, I'm so excited. That's so fun. I feel like you will just enjoy spending time with your husband and seeing how the other half lives, you know? Like,
right? Oh my gosh. One of my favorite things is to like have conversations with lawyers, and I just want to find out like something in their life that isn't about law, because all they want to, the thing they feel most comfortable talking about is law. But I'm like, tell me your best vacation you've ever been on. Tell me like your, the best movie you've seen in the past year. Like, give me anything and we can talk about it. And then so it's always like, I always get fun conversations out of them, because normally they're just like talking about work all the time. But I'm like, let me see into your soul.
I know. Well, I think you are a human icebreaker, quite frankly. Mm. So like just having you around means that this is probably going to be the best lawyer trip that they've ever been on. So if anything, yeah. What should get them geeked this week is being in your presence.
Thank you, princess. I appreciate it. I want to start us off going into the Midnight Club. Princess, you need to repeat after me. All right?
Yes.
To those before.
To those before.
To those after.
To those after.
To us now and to those beyond.
To us now and to those beyond.
Seen or unseen.
Seen or unseen.
Here, but not here.
Here, but not here.
And y'all better have been raising a glass, because I was like, we got to start this by doing that little toast that they did every single time, because I loved it. I absolutely loved everything about this show. It was one of those things where it just got better and better for me. And by the end, I was sobbing. So bless.
Yes, I loved this show so much. I really love horror for teens. I think teen horror is such an important part of like the horror experience. Like, not just like a radar movie de-bloodified for teens, but something really made to deal with teenage issues. And just this was filled with so much validated teenage angst, which Christopher Pike, who is the writer of the book The Midnight Club, is very familiar with. And I just found myself just like really emotionally attaching to these kids, and just the whole time being like, man, I hope this works out for y'all. Like, but then it don't. And also, it was just so great to see Heather Langenkamp, because as my horror boos will know, that's Nancy from Nightmare on Elm Street, girl, and she was here playing a billion different roles. So proud of her.
She is amazing. So my friends, James and Chelsea, they run this horror channel called Dead Meat, and she officiated their wedding.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was the coolest, most amazing thing. And she was like the nicest human. And yeah, she's the queen of horror. So it's just like so cool to see her in this. And she did an amazing job. And like the twist at the end, I was gagged. It was so good.
I could not stand. I just was so happy that she got to play like this really nuanced role. I feel like, you know, the grand dames of horror are like, they're like our elders in the sense that they carry so much like cultural capital. And so like when they get cast in these things, it just feels so good, because it really like, it makes me more invested to see them succeed, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and I think it's so nice that like the people that are making these horror movies and horror shows, they sort of see how they are like culturally relevant and how they are a part of horror, and they respect that, and they like want to have them in their project, so that not only will fans of horror really enjoy that, but it's sort of like telling them how much they love them as well. You know what I mean? It's just such a respectful thing. And I think it's so nice. And let's continue to do it, because it just feels like, oh, this is our little niche thing. And I'm like, yes, it is a little niche thing. And that's what makes it so cool too. Like, because people that are bigger fans, like broader fans of horror, might not notice that. But then the ones that are, it's just like a little nod, a little wink, a little thing to them. And I think that's great. I always love that. As a big nerd, I always think that's the best.
Listen, part of being a nerd is knowing your history. And if you know your horror history, you will just love. And like, you'll just love so many little details that they do to allude to Nightmare.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, I see you. I see you, Mike.
Right, exactly. And it's one of those things where I wasn't sure, like, where the Midnight Club was going to fall for me, because every single, like, Mike Flanagan show has always surprised me, every single one. It's like, it's one of those things where I start out and I'm like, oh, man, how is this going to compare to Hill House? Oh, man, how is this going to compare to this and this and this? And this was so different than everything else, which, again, I should have known, because everything else that he said was so different, too, that it was so brilliant. And it, but at the end, I just, like you said, you feel so connected to these characters, and you feel like, again, you feel like you were there with them. Like you were raising a glass, saying the thing, like hearing their stories, which I also thought was so fun and brilliant, that each episode they got to dive into these stories. And then these like kids got to play the other characters. And I was like, oh yes. Oh, I love this. It was beautiful. Campy. It was like, and then, of course, the classic, like, little Mike Flanagan touches of, like, the jump scares that are very, very, very well done, not overused.
What's in the basement?
I dare you.
No, he doesn't.
It takes a lot to scare me.
No, wait, don't. Don't actually go down there.
He is the only one that can do jump scares that actually, like, makes me yell and scream. Yeah. For the most part, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. The only time I get scared from jump scares is if I'm on, like, in Halloween Horror Nights or something where someone is literally coming at my face.
Right.
But for the most part, in movies, I'm okay. But I swear to God, this man, there's always, like, one, at least one in every show that I watch that I just completely lose my mind. And there was one with the old lady that I just screamed my head off.
As an adult, I can probably count on, like, two hands the amount of times I've had, like, legitimate jump scares as an adult. Like, The Conjuring got me, like, it. And, like, every time, there's always, like you said, there's always a moment in one of his shows where you're just kind of like... Where you just got too comfortable. You got too comfortable. You were probably listening really deep to one of these monologues or soliloquies.
Yes!
And you're like, uh-huh. And all of a sudden you're like, ah! And then it's just like, you got Flanagan'd.
Yeah, we got Flanagan'd. But it's so well done because so many jump scares, I don't know, it's like, I don't want to say it's cheap because it still works, but it's like, it's usually just you're staring at something for so long and then something comes up, but he will like capture your brain and your emotions into like what's happening, that you're distracted by, by your emotional feelings towards these characters. And then a jump scare happens and you're like, oh my God, okay.
Absolutely.
It's brilliant.
Well, for our audience who hasn't seen us, would you want to take us through what The Midnight Club is about?
Sure. So The Midnight Club is a new horror series from Mike Flanagan, and it starts out at Brightcliff, which is this hospice with a mysterious history. It's this big old house, which, again, I love.
Welcome to Brightcliff.
I love a spooky house. And then a club, a midnight club of eight teens with terminal illnesses, they sneak into a library to meet each night at midnight, and they tell their own stories. And while they're doing so, they make this pact that if, like, you are the first to die, you must do everything in your power to reach out to the other side to give proof of the afterlife. So they're, like, also looking for signs of, like, the supernatural afterlife from beyond the veil.
Absolutely.
And then you just add in this freaking cult. Like, we add in this Paragon cult, and oh my God. The only thing I love more than, like, horror is putting a little cult in there. Forget it.
Welcome to your first official night in the Midnight Club.
And also that the leader of this new cult is the super religious woman from Midnight Mass. It took me a second to even click because they were just, she was giving two different energies. I'm like, wait, it's that woman? And I was like, it was like this kind of like, it's her. And I'm like, it's different now. But then the reveal happened, and I'm like, I knew I couldn't trust you.
Like, I knew it. I knew it. Yeah. The Flanagan universe. We love to see them all in the different universes. It is my favorite. But yeah, again, it's just perfect casting. I don't know how they do it. Every single Mike Flanagan show, the casting is so on par. They all can do their monologues, baby, and they do them so well. It is... I swear these shows are like theater. It's almost like you're watching theater because it is so well done. The characters are so developed. The themes are so deep. It's It's so good. God, I just want everybody to watch all of these shows because it's some of the best television that I've ever seen.
And I think what Flanagan does that's really works for me is that, you know how we do the whole like, oh, this is like a blah, 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 hour long movie. It feels like he's doing a very long play, and each of these are different acts. And so in each act, you get like a little bit more. And it's like, I really love that. I love that he's not afraid to space things out, that he's really allowing the episodes to speak for themselves and continue on the story. And that to me is more engaging than a lot of these shows that don't start off until like four episodes and they're like, well, you're going to binge it. I think he really knows how to use the streaming platform to give us a little bit of everything.
Oh, 100%. And so many people don't do that. It's I can't remember who. I think it was Eric Kripke who was saying this, that a lot of people, especially showrunners now, are creating mini movies. When
yes,
he's
from
like,
the guy
no.
from The Boys, yeah.
Yeah, it's like you still are like creating television. It's like the ones that are doing it right are the ones that are thinking about the medium that you're watching. And I think Mike Flanagan does that so well. It's like he doesn't get caught up in like, oh, we're going to make all these little mini movies. Like, no, it's cohesive. It has you guessing. It ends on something that makes you want to keep watching. And it's so well done.
Absolutely. And he cares. You can tell that he really loves horror, which I think is really fun. And I also was going back, and I just really like Christopher Pike's work. So he's the author who wrote the book that The Midnight Club is based on. And, like, if you look at the original cover for it, it's, like, so old school 90s horror. Like, all these white kids just kind of like, what? Like, just looking wide-eyed into the cover. And I was wondering, like, the show is so diverse. And in a way that I was just like, wait, I don't think this is accurate, but like to the books, which I don't care about, obviously, but I was wondering like what came across that. And then I found this interview with Christopher Pike on Electric Literature from 2019. And he talks about how he really didn't write a lot of diversity into his work, but that, you know, he ceased pushing for it for a while until Fall into Darkness was published. And then Tatiana Ali, who is from the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, was also in it. And he talks about how he wished he had done differently.
Oh, interesting.
So it was just interesting now to get an adaptation of his work that does that differently now. So now he gets to have the diversity that he wanted while also being accountable for the fact that he didn't, you know, include it at the beginning, which I really appreciated.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's so great.
Yeah. No,
that's cool that he said that.
Yeah. It was a fun thing to find when I was going through my little, you know, backstory of research about everything. I think that it made the text richer because I totally spaced out that this was a period piece until all of a sudden they're like, I got you the new PlayStation. Yeah. And it was the old school PlayStation. And I was like, Oh, we're back.
right. You see, like, the old computers, and you're like, is this just because it's an old house? Or is, like, nope.
I thought just the homies were broke, you know? I was just like, you know, if it works, it works. I'm not going to judge who's working on a budget. But then when you see that, and then you see the Rotophones, and I think it's this weird thing where, like, I will forget that cell phones don't exist until I am forced to deal with it. Like, I remember when I was watching Stranger Things and I'm like, why don't you just text her? And then I'm like, all right, you can't. You actually can't do that. But it stresses me out.
I know, right? But so many plots from the 90s wouldn't make any sense. Like, it was all because they didn't have phones.
They didn't have cell phones. Like, imagine, just an Apple Watch would have saved so many lives, you know?
Oh, God. Like, Friends wouldn't exist. All of Friends would not exist if they had cell phones. I wanted to ask you, because there's so many different kids and characters, like, do you have a character that you liked the most, that you connected with, that you thought was, like, acted really well? Like, tell me your faves. I want to know.
Oh, my God. I loved so many characters. I felt like, but I think I just have to tell what my favorite story was and just give me.
Okay, ooh, that's a good one. Yeah, let's start with that.
I think my favorite was the video game storyline. That was the one where it's our hot boyfriend.
Yeah,
he comes back. And he's playing the older version of the character. And, like, there's all these twists and turns. It was so Terminator. I was sitting here like, oh, shit. You know, just, like, I was mind was blown. I really love that episode. It was romantic. It was tragic. Mm-hmm. It was everything. And I just thought to myself, like, I just want to sit in this story forever. I got so invested. Like, to me, that was my favorite because it told us so much about sort of like who that character was. It was like, you know, connecting him to the whole romance he has with the other character. And it was just really well acted and really well done. And I was just so excited to see our play husband out there that I was just like, he's back, everybody.
Oh, same.
Rahul Kohli, he played Sheriff Hassan in Midnight Mass, and he was also in The Haunting of Bly Manor. He's super hot. I want him to be Reed Richards. Just saying. So yeah, I love that episode just because I felt like it really just, it set up so many relationships. It told a really good self-contained story.
So would that be very similar to a story that you would maybe tell?
I definitely would have more witches involved. I definitely would have like, there's a witch's curse. Like the witch one was also really good. Because I'm like, oh man, she saved the white man. Now her best friend's gonna die. Don't you hate when that happens? Like, I was just like, truly every practical magic's worst nightmare.
Right. Oh my God. Okay. So yours would be video games plus some witches.
Yeah. Video game witches is where I'm going.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be perfect. My favorite story that was told was the cyborg story. It was, the story that Spencer told about who, like, they taped the future at 3 a.m. and then they started, like, betting and falling in love and then messing with the future. And then there's just, like, the biggest, most ridiculous twist at the end. It's like, oh, no, he's a cyborg who escaped back in time. And then he, like, removed his skin and I just screamed. Like, what is going on?
It was like, that was so 90s because you know that if it had been made today, it would have been like some weird NFT shit. But it's like, but it's all Terminator inspired. Yes. And it's just like, I get it. You guys are teenagers in the 90s. This is your frame of reference.
Yes, exactly. The videotapes as well. It felt very like The Ring, and that always freaked me out. So I'm like, uh-oh, they're using videotapes. Something's going to happen.
There's no scarier format than a VHS. Like, Right? Sorry, Blu-ray, but you just aren't terrifying.
I don't know. Nothing ever happened with DVDs. I guess it was like, you know, no ghosts, no entities, nothing to get trapped in there. It's just like not physical enough, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's because they would so easily scratch if a demon tried to get into it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you're trying to get your 4K super ultra version of the Batman, and it's like, no, you can't. The demon made it unwatchable. It won't even load.
Right. Oh my God, that's so funny. I don't even know what would the equivalent be now. It's just like the demon logged into your password. Like, they know you're logged into your streaming.
It would hack your Insta and your thing. You're like, I got hacked. And it's like, for real. Like, all of a sudden, all your social media is like, all your no, there's an episode of some show. I think it was Assassination Nation, where like the plot was that someone hacked into this girl's text messages and like put it all publicly. And I remember I was sitting with my friend and we both gasped because we were like, oh no, I don't want no one seeing my chats. Those are for.
Yeah. That's what the demons would do for sure. They'd like go and change like your favorite. You'd be like, this isn't my cue. This isn't it.
Yeah.
This is like, I would never put this on here. Like, what are you talking about? This wasn't watched. Like, just little things, and then
turns off your two factor.
Yeah. You're like, no. Oh man, I can't. Now we need this, Mike Flanagan. If you're listening, please, the next one that you do, make it this, and it will be the most terrifying thing that all of Gen Z has ever watched. So that was one of my favorites, but honestly, like, every story I just thought was so clever, and especially how they, like, wove in parts of their own lives. Mm-hmm. It was kind of brilliant. I loved it.
Absolutely. I thought the funniest one was definitely the Jesus Girls noir thing. Just, it was so over the top and twisty. I was like, oh, this girl is definitely, like, watching Dick Tracy and doing all this stuff. I live for it. But, yeah, it was very funny. I thought that was probably, like, the campiest one. That was another one where I was like, what year is this? Because when she's like, he gave me oral herpes. I was like, girl, I was like, what? I just sitting here like, girl, everybody got that. What are you talking about? And then it was like, oh, it's the '90s. I don't know. They're still living in these sex negative times.
100%. It was very, very funny. Like those little nods were just brilliant. And then also just all the kids' personalities like worked really well. And they just had great chemistry, like the group of them.
Yeah.
You just really believed that they were friends. And then at the end, when they were all like, you know, sacrificing things for each other, I'm like, damn, they all love each other. Like, damn, I would do this for my friends. You know what I mean? You're just like, shit.
You know, it was so funny because obviously I'm not religious in that way. Mm-hmm. So like the Jesus girl was like, you don't mess with spirits. I was like, she's not wrong, guys. So I was like, do the witchcraft, but also make sure you know what you're actually doing. Because I'm like, have you done the research? Do you have the ashes mm-hmm. together? Do you have your circle to contain the spirit if it should escape?
Right?
I needed to know what their whole research process was.
Not enough. They did not research enough, that's for sure. Especially at the end. I was like, girl, get out of there. She's using you. Do you not see this? Like, she almost drank that poison. And I was like, I can't.
The moment any adult, just like any kind of stranger danger, the moment an adult goes to you, an actual teenager is like, I need you to help me do this, is when like, no, thank you.
Right?
You got capitalism on your side. You need to go figure this shit out on your own.
I agree. It was one of those things where I'm like, oh no. If like either way, even if like this girl did like, you know, live forever and have this secret, I'm like, what would you think that she's just going to give it to you? Like, girl, what are you doing? Like, how do you think that this all immortal woman is just going to be like, you know what? I like you. I'm going to save you and give you the secret. It's like, no. Come on, you gotta know that people aren't gonna do that. Like, even the ones with the power, they're not gonna do it. Don't trust. Too much trust.
They are young. And I think it's funny because I think sometimes in horror, there's like a wide range. Like, there's just the biggest spectrum of likable to unlikability characters is in horror, because like sometimes they either go full unlikable or they make them super precocious. Mm-hmm. And I love that these kids are not, quote unquote, realistic, because I don't think any kid is going to soliloquy like that. But because they're so sick and because they're like at this place where they've had to like adultify so quickly, it makes sense that they are A, this morbid, and B, like this like intense about like their feelings and everything, because they have like, they feel like they have to feel everything now or mm-hmm. it's too late.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that lends itself to creating like the kind of melodrama and like stuff that Flanagan so likes to like move horror around. It was very effective to me.
I agree. It felt more, I mean, as realistic as it could be, it felt more believable than just like, oh, here's all these kids just, like you said, soliloquying at each other about their lives. But there were some big themes in this that even, I mean, again, I shouldn't have been surprised, but I was surprised because, like, I, at the end, like, when they were talking about love and how, like, you are hope and it's like, I'm gonna die, but, you know, dying is a really shitty reason not to live. Like, fuck, man. Damn.
But there is something about, like, being on the, like, teenagers, and why people love to write for teens is because for most teenagers, depending on like your class and everything, like that's your invincible period where you have like the most time to like figure out who you are
for
and
sure.
do things. Like the reason why people write YA is not because they just love teenagers. It's because being a teenager,
there's no responsibility.
Is a time when,
there's freedom.
Yeah, you can do things. You're like at this liminal space.
Right.
So people want to explore that. And I think that you have these kids who are like, really, they're adults in a lot of ways, but they are stunted because of how their illness has had to put them into this, you know, almost put them on ice mm-hmm. in terms of their development. They have to like kind of stay in this in-between stage between adulthood and childhood forever mm-hmm. because they can't be fully independent, but they're not kids. And I think that makes it all that much more complicated. And it reminds me of like why teens are good protagonists for these kind of stories, because adults would have just been like, all right, I got to get out of here.
They're like, all right, this is the end. It's been a good run.
I don't have to pay rent anymore. All right, we'll figure this out. Is this free? I was like, what's the healthcare situation going? I was wondering who was paying for everything. Of course, my 30-year-old self, I'm like, all right, so who is this Medicaid? Is this Blue Shield covering these costs? Like, what's happening?
And I wanted to ask you, like, surrounding all of that, like, because they all had to sacrifice something of theirs to, like, the five sisters or whatever when they were performing that little ritual. And, Princess, do you know, do you have an item that means a lot to you that you would sacrifice?
Damn.
For your friend?
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like despite everything, I don't really hold on to material things. I think if there was going to be anything that I was going to, like, get rid of, I have my late cousin's jacket that I kept just to remind me of him and keep him close. So I think if I was going to give up something to save a friend that was really personal and meaningful, it would be that.
Mm. That's nice.
Yeah. Depends on the friend.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking
how
about,
good
too.
Of a friend.
That's kind of horrible, but I was just like, because I was thinking about all my stuff, and I'm like, well, the most important thing to me is, like, my wedding band, but it's like, I'm not going to give that up for anyone other than Joe, because
like, that's Joe's emergency get out of jail summoning card. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Exactly. That's his horcrux. Like, that's for him. Yeah. So it's like, for a friend, I got to find something else. And yeah. Then also it's like, what friend are we talking about? Do I have to save? What about my sister? Does she have to have one? Do I have to have, like, certain items, like, just in case, like, for her?
It's like, you know, I would give up anything to save my brother or my mom or my dad or, like, my closest friends. But, like, close associates?
Yeah.
You know, maybe my signed Anne Rice book, you know, that would, I would give, you know, I have a bunch of signed book copies. I'm like, all right, each friend can get one of these.
Right? I was like, okay, let's figure it out. Which friend is going to get this stuff? You're like, go through all your, put it all in a box. Yeah. And you're like, okay.
Like, I feel like if it was you, I'd be like, all right, here are all my signed Harry Potter editions. They were only collecting dust anyway.
Yeah. Throw anything Harry Potter related into the fire. Yeah. And that would save me for sure.
The only reason I'll keep Harry Potter around is just to save you.
Oh my gosh. That is the biggest sacrifice you can make. So I really, really do appreciate it. I just, again, I thought that was very well done. It was such a nice thing to see. They're just, I don't know. I'm a fucking sucker when it comes to friendship, man. When
Hell
it comes
yeah.
to, like, found family, having, like, love being the most powerful thing. Whenever you do that, I'm a bawling mess. So you did it to me, Flanagan. Yeah, you made me sob at the end. So good job, sir. And that's another thing that I just want to mention that he does so well is he makes your fear personal. Like, he knows sort of, like, what makes you human and what makes you the most scared is, like, the personal shit that, like, death. Like, death is, like, the scariest thing. It's the most feared, but also, like, not talked about. And so to deep dive into that and with kids, with teenagers, with people that are at this vulnerable state, like you were talking about, it's amazing. On that note, Princess, what is your one more thing that you want to add?
My one more thing is when you have to choose between your semi-creepy headmistress or the creepy woman in the forest, it is best to just ask the group what they're thinking. You know, don't just hold it to yourself. Just be very transparent and be like, all right, we got creepy headmistress. We got an creepy lady in the forest. Which one is worse? And honestly, it's usually gonna be the vegan. No shade to vegans, but you know exactly what y'all can be like sometimes. It's the vegan.
Thank you, Princess, for that insight into not trusting vegans. For me,
not magical ones. Not true. Definitely not.
Honestly, a magical vegan would be an amazing supervillain. So,
Scott Pilgrim.
Oh my god, that's right. Stop. Wow, that's perfect.
See?
Okay. Well, what are you convinced me. Well, what can I say? Any magical vegans out there, we're on to you. So my one more thing would have to be I wrote down like a lot of quotes from this show because one of my favorite things after watching like a Mike Flanagan show is I talk to like my friends like Brizzy and Lizzie and we just like say our favorite quotes. And one of the quotes that was one of my faves was the freaking poem that she was reading at the end that she wants to be read when she dies. And a line in there was, "Love doesn't die, people do." And it just, I don't know, just recently I visited my, I'm not going to cry, I visited my grandma's grave with my mom and my sister, and it just really reminded me, and this did as well, which again was probably why I was sobbing, that like even though people may pass on, like the way that you keep them alive is through the love that they had for you and that they had for the other people in your life. And if you keep their love alive, then they will forever be alive. So.
Agreed.
That's where I want to end it. Because I'm a cheese ball and love makes me cry.
And I love you. And I don't ever cry about that.
I love you. Perfect.
We did it. Okay, y'all, you know the spooky doopy drill. If you like us, follow us. You can find the Geek Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, everywhere you go, anywhere you want it. That's the way you need it. And for those of you who absolutely cannot get enough of us, let us know in a 5-star review.
That's right. The Geek Podcast is hosted by me, Tessa Netting.
And me, Princess Weeks.
You can find me on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, anywhere on the internet at Tessa Netting.
And you can find me on YouTube as Princess Weeks and on Twitter as Weeks Princess. Next week, I'm so excited, we get to talk about School for Good and Evil, one of my favorite book series. Oh, finally comes to light. I cannot wait. I'm already a stan. Tessa, we're going to have such a good discussion.
I can't wait. Hype. Cannot wait.
So excited. This is a Netflix Geeked and Spoke Media production.
Kelly Kolf is our producer, and Reyes Mendoza is our associate producer. Delora Patton is our coordinating producer, and a special thanks to Carson McCain.
Sound design and engineering by Evan Arnett, who also composed and performed our original theme.
Our executive producers are Keisha TK Dutez, Brigham Mosley, Aaliyah Tavakolian, and Keith Reynolds.
To stay updated on all things Geeked, be sure to follow us at Netflix Geeked on Twitter, Instagram, and the TikToks.
Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.
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 Bye. Happy Halloween.
Oh, man. Geeked.